The Bermuda Triangle, written by Sapphic Scholar and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, Hex. Relationship, Ava Daniels / Deborah Vance. Rating, explicit. No archive warnings apply. Additional tags, post-season 2, finding their way back to each other, smut, like an asshole for asshole rom-com, semi-public sex.
Deborah?
Ava slurs into the phone, pulling it away from her face to be sure it's right side up.
Deborah, she repeats. I have an idea.
There's no response, and it takes a moment for Ava to remember she'd gotten Deborah's voicemail.
Right. I know what you're doing. Dropping the lawsuit? I know what you're doing.
It had all become very clear after the second edible. It got a little fuzzier again after the shots, but Ava's pretty sure she's still on track.
It's our Brooklyn Bridge. Miranda and Samantha. No, Steve. Wouldn't it have been better if it was Samantha, though?
Ava drops down to the floor, tracing her fingertip along the outline of a zebra on these stupidly expensive silk pajamas she'd purchased in a fit of nostalgic yearning.
Did I tell you I got a callback for another gig for a new season of this show? Sex in the City, here we go again, or something. I don't know. Apparently no one likes this comedian character. But it's Kelly. Who doesn't like Kelly? They're so hot.
Ava flops all the way onto her back and blinks up at the ceiling.
Do you think it's like two on the nose, though? An unlikable queer comedy writer penning jokes for another unlikable queer comic?
Ava's eyes flutter closed and her breathing evens out.
It's not as fun writing jokes for other people.
Tears burn at the back of her eyes, and she blinks them away.
You're not gonna get a new writer, are you?
She rolls onto her side, only to land on the remote. The sound of Carrie's voiceover comes blaring through the speakers of her television, and it takes several tries for her to pause the movie again.
Oh, fuck, right, the Brooklyn Bridge!
God, how humiliating would it be if she went through all of this and then forgot the whole point of the call?
2 weeks! We're gonna be at the courthouse in 2 weeks, and if you're not there, I'll know, okay? I'm gonna be there, because it's worth it. We are worth it. But if you're not there, I'll move on, okay? But I'll be there.
She rolls up into a seated position and fumbles for the pen and notebook on her coffee table. The page she'd set up for character notes is completely blank, but it's whatever. Dr. Torres isn't even in this movie.
I'm writing it down now. Court date equals Brooklyn Bridge.
Ava nods decisively at the page.
But don't go to Brooklyn. I'll be in Vegas. At the courthouse. Yeah.
She waits a beat, then hangs up.
Good.
Yeah, that was good. Ava wakes to a pounding headache that runs all the way from the base of her skull out through her temples. Her mouth is dry and tastes like ass, and her back aches from spending the night curled up on the couch for God knows what reason.
Christ, it's almost enough to make her miss her vague attempts at sobriety, or at least partying with chiller people.
That fucking Sex in the City movie is still paused on the television screen, and Ava can barely remember starting it, let alone if there was anything in it that she should know for this new reboot punch-up gig. She's pretty sure Jimmy only said a general familiarity with the original series was needed, and Ava thinks she watched enough episodes back in the day. If it weren't for The Mummy, she thinks Samantha and her string of one-night stands might have been a strong contender for her bisexual awakening. Her route. God, she should watch But I'm a Cheerleader again. It takes several more minutes for Ava to work up the energy to stand, and the whole room tilts and spins on its axis. She takes a shuddering breath in, then out. Again and again, until she stops feeling like she's about to puke. The few steps into the kitchen feel like a marathon, but the glass of water works wonders. By the time she's managed some toast, a shower, and Advil, Ava can almost believe she's human again. That yoga class Ruby invited her to is so off the table, but she figures she can still make her Saturday productive if she can just get through this movie. Besides, she paid for a whole 24-hour rental. She may as well make the most of it. Settling back into the couch, Ava grimaces as her brick of a phone digs into her ass. She blinks down at the screen. There's a 5 a.m. missed call from her mother, who apparently still hasn't grasped the time difference, and a couple of text messages she slowly clicks her way through. The most recent one is from Ruby, a reminder about the yoga class followed by, "If you're skipping it again, just let me know and we can just grab coffee after." Ava taps out a quick reply agreeing to coffee, then navigates back to her home screen. Jimmy has sent yet another reminder about her Monday morning meeting, which he, yet again, doesn't need. She knows he's nervous about landing gigs for one of his few clients, but also she could do with about a quarter of the level of anxiety he's been radiating for the last month. She sends him a reassuring, "Got it, bud, all over that prep work." It's true enough. The sight of her last messages makes her heart stutter in her chest. They're from Deborah, and it takes Ava several minutes before she can work up the courage to open the first one. It turns out to be nothing more than a confusing, "Glad to hear you're getting work," followed by, "You're not that unlikable." Ava sends another message to Jimmy. "Did you tell Deborah about my audition?" Trying not to dwell, Ava turns the movie back on and kicks her feet up onto the coffee table. She flips to a clean page in her notebook, ignoring whatever drunken nonsense was scrawled on the last one, and begins jotting down character notes, trying to get a handle on the kinds of jokes the writers favor. Not that funny is what she's getting after the first half hour, but she's got the reboot episodes all lined up on her queue for the rest of the weekend, and dares to dream they might be punchier and a little less dated. After a while, her phone buzzes with a reply from Jimmy. No. Why? A dozen questions swirl through Ava's mind, and she tries to quash the cruel, pointless hope that Deborah might be keeping tabs on her much like Ava has been in return. She's not particularly successful, though, so she forces herself to pause the movie and go grab a snack to give her hand something to do. Something that isn't sent a bunch of texts to Deborah in rapid succession. Between sifting through the popcorn in her lap to find the most buttery pieces and taking intermittent notes on the movie, she can almost pretend that this is just another working day. At least until she gets to a scene in a therapist's office and something niggles at the back of her brain. By the time Steve and Miranda are kissing on the Brooklyn Bridge, snippets of the night are coming back to her, and Ava frantically clicks through her call log, staring down in horror at the 8-minute-long outgoing call to Deborah at 2 in the morning. Fuck! Why did she ever think a dumb phone would fix all her problems? Then again, before Deborah, the chance of Ava's voluntarily calling someone was below zero. Ava closes her eyes and tries to remember what she'd said. Probably something about having a crush on Samantha. Hopefully nothing about how that seems indicative of a larger pattern of attraction to older blonde women, with great tits, her brain helpfully supplies. Clearly something about the possible new job. Maybe it was just about the job. Except that something about the Brooklyn Bridge feels so weighty not to have made an appearance at some point. Ava flips back in her notebook to that page of drunken scrawl and finds a single line in massive, sloppily bolded letters. Court date equals Brooklyn Bridge. There are little hearts doodled all around it like she's back in a version of middle school she never actually enjoyed. Oh, right, that's right. She's scheduled a rom-com moment. Good. So good. Everything proceeding exactly according to plan. Fuck! Ava yells, loud enough for her downstairs neighbors to throw something at the ceiling. Ava's not sure why she's on the plane. Deborah has given no indication that she'll be at the courthouse, after all. Outside of those initial two texts, she hasn't replied to any of the follow-up messages Ava sent, and Ava has herself carefully skirted around any mention of the whole reunion plan thing. But Ava needs to know. And the idea of Deborah standing there waiting for Ava, only to be left alone? Fuck, Ava could never do that to her. So she'll go. She'll show up and stand there alone and get stood up like a complete fucking loser. And then she'll have her closure. The sign she needs to go back to L.A. and start thinking seriously about a future without Deborah. To try again with Ruby, maybe. Things are better now. They seem to get each other in a way they didn't used to. They can talk about things without it turning into a fight, and even if some of the passion is gone, there's still that old flicker of desire that Ava could imagine reigniting if she ever stopped holding a giant fucking torch for the most unavailable woman alive. Excuse me. The man next to Ava motions at her legs as he moves to stand. Again? Ava whines, unbuckling her seatbelt and shimmying into the aisle to let him pass. A fucking Spirit Airlines. Deborah does not show. It's a million degrees, and Ava stands outside for over an hour, probably getting a sunburn bad enough to give her skin cancer. Life's always known how to kick her when she's down. Ava paces and picks at the stems of the ridiculous roses she bought at the airport like a total idiot, and watches as they slowly wilt in the Vegas heat. When 1 hour becomes 2 hours, and their scheduled court date recedes into the annals of history that will never be, Ava tosses the flowers into the dumpster and hails a cab. She nearly texts Ruby from the backseat, but decides that's something the old Ava would do. New and improved Ava is gonna stop drinking, again, and she's gonna process her feelings enough to actually get over Deborah before she goes stringing Ruby along. Ava is nearly 2 full weeks into her new and improved Ava stage. This Ava washes her face every night. She goes to yoga with Ruby at least half of the times she's invited. She has not once gotten so drunk or high that she's left a humiliating voicemail for her former boss. And she has only had one achingly intimate dream about Deborah. Okay, maybe two, but then the second one Deborah transformed into Miss Honey halfway through, and therefore Ava thinks it's only fair to count that as a dream about Miss Honey instead. So, it only feels fitting that Ava comes home from work to find an all-too-familiar Rolls-Royce illegally parked in her spot. Seeing no one in the driver's seat, Ava groans and drives 2 blocks away to the garage she'd had to use when the maintenance came in to replace her leaky window. It's just like Deborah to show up with no notice just to inconvenience Ava. That thought is enough to have Ava hooking an illegal U-turn and hightailing it right back to her place. She throws her car into park directly behind Deborah's, practically bumper to bumper, to block her in. An inconvenience for an inconvenience. The anger is good, though. The frustration is nearly enough to mask the yawning abyss that is her anxiety over whatever this impromptu visit is about. A restraining order, probably, her subconscious helpfully provides. Only there's no Deborah waiting at the front door. And Ava's half expecting this to all turn out to be some grand hallucination born of too much caffeine and too little sleep. At least, until she makes it up the stairs. New and improved Ava does not take the elevator just 3 floors, thank you very much, and finds Deborah leaning up against a wall outside her apartment door, looking as impeccably dressed and made up as ever.
Deborah?
Deborah seems almost startled to see her.
You took the stairs?
Ava lets out a little bark of laughter.
It's one of these things I'm trying. Self-improvement or whatever.
Deborah hums. L.A. got to you, didn't it?
Tragically, there are far fewer rental scooters out here.
And a yoga studio on every corner. Ava shrugs.
Don't knock it till you've tried it.
Something flashes in Deborah's eyes.
Kiki mentioned you'd been going. You guys talk about me?
Deborah tilts her head. Looking all too casual. You know my tolerance for stories about other people's children is low. It's true, but Luna has always been the exception, and the blatant lie prickles at Ava's skin. She lets out a noncommittal sound. New and improved Ava does not pick fights over inconsequential little white lies, and pulls her keys from her bag.
So, you here for a reason?
Can't a successful comedian visit her former writer?
Maybe with a call first. You know, sometime in the past month or two.
Deborah rolls her shoulders back, that smooth masking falling down into place.
I had a meeting with Jimmy and the network execs. Thought I'd drop off a housewarming gift since I never got to see the place in Vegas. Never got to or never wanted to?
Ava shoots back, turning the key and nudging the door open with her shoulder.
You want a tour?
It's the right thing to do. The kind of thing her dad would have told her was polite. The kind of thing new and improved Ava would do.
Fine. All right.
Deborah follows Ava in like she's doing her a favor, and for that, Ava points at the little shoe rack by the door.
Heels off. I'm planning on getting my security deposit back.
Apparently, hardwood is notoriously easy to fuck up with stilettos, at least so her landlord told her before rolling his eyes at her chunky Doc Martens. Deborah lets out a little huff of air through her nose, but does as she's told, carefully towing her way out of her shoes and leaving them by the door.
This is the living room, Ava says in a cold monotone, like that isn't abundantly clear. Kitchen's over there.
She isn't improved enough to offer Deborah a drink.
Bedroom's back here. And over there is the writing nook,
where the magic happens. Here I'd have thought you'd point to the bedroom on that line, Deborah jokes, but it lands like an anvil between them, a reminder of a language they'd once shared that is no longer.
Right. Well, that's the place.
Deborah runs her tongue over her teeth as her gaze tracks around the space. Hopefully you can find a place for this. She hands over a carefully wrapped gift. Fuck, those corners are meticulous. And Ava takes it with a smile that feels more like a grimace.
Thanks.
Right. Deborah makes a slow circuit of the apartment on her way to the door, and Ava notes the exact moment her steps falter, gaze catching on something in Ava's writing nook. And, oh fuck, that fucking photo she stole from that Sacramento club what feels like ages ago. Fucking fuck. This is what she gets for being a sentimental little asshole. God, CoStar was right. She should have gotten rid of past attachments that were only holding her back. But Deborah doesn't say anything, just chances a look over her shoulder as she slips back on her shoes. I hope you get what you need here, she says. And honestly, what kind of cryptic bullshit is that? She's gone before Ava can call her out on it, and Ava takes several slow, deep breaths in through her nose and out through her mouth. Acknowledge the hold Deborah has on you. Let it go. Acknowledge the anger. Let it go. Figuring she's already been dragged back several steps in this whole moving on process, Ava tears at those tidy corners of the wrapping paper, finding a framed album-style cover of Deborah's special. Oh. Well. That's fine. Ava already has a DVD copy, but she supposes it's a nice touch to have a more aesthetically pleasing version to display. A little narcissistic as a housewarming gift, but then again, when has Deborah ever been anything but? She ignores the litany of counterexamples all scrabbling their way to the front of her memory. As she goes to set it down on the pile of stuff that still needs to find a permanent home in the new place, a small envelope falls from where it had been tucked into the frame. Letting curiosity get the better of her, Ava slides her finger down the seal. It's a short note on expensive, personalized cardstock with DV carefully pressed into it like a seal. Rich people, man. You've been a lot of things to me. Co-writer is the least I could give you credit for. Ava glances back at the cover, finding a line, right there in the bottom corner, listing the writers as Deborah Vance and Ava Daniels. She runs a finger along the lettering, not caring in the slightest about the smudges left on the glass in its wake. She'd heard on QVC that the special had gone into a second printing when the network picked it up, but no one had mentioned... Ava glances back at the card. You've been a lot of things to me. Honestly, what in the fuck is she supposed to get from that? And how dare Deborah come waltzing back into her life for 3 goddamn minutes and throw her off her game like that? Ava's already got her phone out to leave a voicemail that the new and improved Ava can regret tomorrow when a knock sounds at the door. And Jesus, if it's that Twitch streamer who thinks he's a big deal here to ask her out again, she's gonna kill him. It's not him. It's Deborah. You're blocking me in, Deborah says, car keys dangling from her fingers. What? Your car. Ava blinks at her for a long moment. What the fuck is your cryptic little card about? She watches as Deborah closes off completely. You deserve the writing credit. I made sure you finally got it. Not that line, you asshole. You're welcome, Deborah huffs. I've been many things to you? What's that about? Deborah barges in, kicking the door closed behind her, and Ava braces herself to whatever's coming next. You want to ask questions? Why do you have a stolen photo of me from before you were born on your desk, hmm? Why didn't you just mail me my gift? Why'd you leave me a drunken, rambling voicemail and ask me to recreate Sleepless in Seattle with you? Every question is getting louder and louder. I've never even seen that movie, Ava yells back. Christ, the cheap knockoff of it then. I don't know, why'd you fire me and push me out of your life like I was some drunken one-night stand you wanted to forget? Why'd you show up at the courthouse with the roses, for fuck's sake? Why'd you... Wait. Ava's thoughts skid to a halt, toppling over one another as everything reorients itself around that admission. You were there? Deborah swallows hard.
God forbid you'd gotten all dramatic and tried to pitch yourself off the roof or something. You're telling me that you just sat there and watched me wait and wait and wait for you? Like some asshole?
Deborah sniffs haughtily.
You waited 2 hours. I waited a whole 6 weeks before you called.
Ava lets out a loud scoff. She's half ready to start tearing her hair out. Or maybe Deborah's first.
Are you fucking kidding me? You were waiting for me? In what fucking world was I the one that was supposed to call first?
You're the one who decided that being fired meant we'd never see each other or talk to each other again.
What?
Ava closes her eyes and tries to think back to that night on the roof. Everything had spiraled out of control so goddamn fast.
No, but you agreed. You pushed me away.
For your own good, Ava. Deborah gives her a smile so tender, Ava aches with it. And look at you. Look how far you've come. Ava swallows down the rush of emotion.
I'm sick of other people thinking they know what's best for me.
She fixes Deborah with a hard glare.
I thought you, of all people, might get that.
Deborah's lips press together. Better to learn now, kid. Everyone disappoints you someday. Ava swallows hard and grabs her keys from the hook.
I'll move my car.
The elevator trip down to the garage. The release of Ava Daniels, Too New, Too Improved, has officially been postponed until further notice, is silent and awkward, and Ava shuffles out the second the doors inch open. She backs her car out without saying a word and drives several slow laps around the block before pulling back into her spot. If she goes back home and hammers a series of sloppy holes sure to cost her the security deposit into a wall before finding the exact right spot for the framed cover of My Bad, well, that's between her and whatever cruel god is laughing down at her.
The new gig is fine. It's just a short stint. A few weeks of half days doing punch-ups for one character's lines and nothing more. But every time Ava has to explain to the regular staff writers that the point of comedy is to be funny, not just to say things on a stage in front of a fake brick wall, she finds herself longing to text Deborah. A part of her thinks maybe she owes her an apology for those early punchline-less jokes. Ava doubts they were this painfully bad, but maybe on paper they were. She kind of wants to ask, wants to know what was there that made Deborah take a chance and stick with her until things finally clicked into place. So definitively, Ava can barely remember a time when they hadn't worked. With more free time than she had while they were on full time with Taylor's new show, her new show too, she mentally corrects, Ava's gone back to yoga again and had a few one-night stands here and there. It doesn't feel right to try to date anyone, not when it's still Deborah's laughter she hears when she dreams of the future. But she's trying. Little by little, day by day. Her resume has grown longer, and her apartment feels a little more lived in each week. She even let Ruby take her to some boutique and buy her an overpriced artisan vase with a plan she'll be lucky to keep from a killing before the month is out. Ava's poking at the drooping petals of the plan she really has been trying to keep alive, debating whether they're the result of over- or underwatering, when her phone, a smart one again, apparently existing in this business without 24/7 access to email is kind of a no-go, dings with an email. It's from Jeremy, the dude Marcus uses to schedule all of Deborah's travel, and Ava's stomach clenches painfully at the memories that come rushing back to her. She's halfway through drafting a reply to explain to Jeremy that she actually no longer works for Deborah and doesn't need to be copied on her travel plans anymore, when she spots her own name on the itinerary. Frowning, she looks a little closer. There's a plane ticket for a flight from LAX to LAS, scheduled to leave that Friday night, as well as a hotel reservation at the New York New York Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, because of course there's a New York in Vegas. A buzz from the downstairs doorbell sounds before Ava can quite wrap her head around what the hell is happening.
Hello? Ava calls into the intercom. Delivery for Miss Daniels.
Sure.
Ava buzzes them up, wondering if that miracle plant spray she ordered from one of the infomercials that runs during the late night's QVC reruns has finally arrived. After a quick signature, Ava finds herself with a box that seems way too big for an 8-ounce bottle of plant vitamins. Or plant steroids, hopefully. She really needs a miracle to get that thing back to green and thriving. After a bit of wrestling with enough tape to tie down an elephant, Eva finally manages to rip the box open, blinking down at a dress she hasn't seen in ages, along with a pair of pricey unisex shoes that had physically pained her to leave behind. Another piece of that fancy cardstock is in the box. "Wear this on Friday." It's unsigned, but Eva lets her finger trail over the indentations of the DV for long enough that her fingertips tingle. Well, that's one answer, and a million new questions. By Friday, Eva still has no answers. Deborah has gone radio silent, not that it's much of a change from how things have been since her impromptu visit, and has, apparently, sworn her entire staff to a vow of silence that not even Josefina will break. She did, however, fill Eva in on the rest of the house gossip. If Eva teared up at the realization that she was still included, that's between her and the NSA devices presumably tracking her at all times. Despite it all, Eva knows she's going. She can't handle the idea of having that many hypothetical what-ifs hanging over her head for the rest of her life, all because she didn't get on the plane. So, after work on Friday, she throws a random assortment of things into her suitcase. A nice little carry-on bag she purchased with her first new paycheck as a kind of testament to a newfound adulthood, and eats a very grown-up dinner of cereal and string cheese. While downloading her plane ticket to her phone on her way out the door, Eva notices that she's been booked in first class and, after a frantic couple minutes of deliberation, strips off her ratty old sweatpants. She tears through her luggage for the dress Deborah had sent and slips it on, almost wishing she had that stupid zipper pull Deborah was hawking on QVC. Instead, she contorts herself into a dozen weird angles and sends up a silent thank you to Ruby for dragging her to all those yoga classes, as she finally gets it all the way up just in time for her Uber driver to start calling and threatening to leave without her. She figures the 5-star rating and tip makes up for the lateness. At least she hopes so, if only for her rider rating's sake. The rush through security and down to the boarding gate passes by in a blur, and her section is already being boarded when she gets down there. First-class perks, she supposes. Within what feels like minutes, she finds herself on the plane. And holy shit, first class is fancy. Not quite PJ levels of fancy, but it's about 9 million steps up from Spirit Airlines economy seating, and Eva luxuriates in the plush seats and the complimentary champagne and the lack of anyone sitting directly beside her. The flight is over before Ava's even gotten used to being in the air, and Eva relishes in being granted priority offboarding as she boots her phone back up and starts scheduling an Uber to take her to the hotel. Miss Daniels? Eva looks up and spots Ronnie standing there with a sign for a Miss Eva Daniels. What are you doing here? I'm taking you to your hotel. But why? He shrugs. I don't ask questions. Yeah, okay. That sounds right. And so Eva skips right past the line for cabs and the mad rush to claim the first Ubers in the area, waltzing out of the airport with a personal driver for the evening. Hey, any chance we could stop at... No can do, sorry. Eva sighs. So, not quite personal driver. Maybe more like a very fancy kidnapper. Still, the car is perfectly chill, and the seats are just as buttery soft as she remembered, and she won't complain about her involuntary luxury vacation. On the drive over to the New York hotel, Ronnie fills Eva in on some random details about Deborah's life. They're mostly about Barry and Kara's vet appointments and Aiden's UFC fights and all the other mundane little details Eva once had easy access to, but she basks in them all the same. Here we are, Ronnie announces as the car rolls to a stop in front of the main entrance to the hotel. A porter is right there to get the car door for Eva. Can I get your bags? Oh, I got it. It's just the one. I insist, Miss Daniels. Figuring she'll be let in on the mystery at some point, Eva shrugs. All right. She follows the porter to the elevator bank, then up to one of the top floors where he leads her to a room straight out of the movies. Holy shit! She watches the porter stifle a laugh. I take it the room is to your liking, ma'am? This is bigger than my whole apartment. Fuck! He covers the snort of laughter with a cuff. I'm to take you to your meeting, if you're ready. Oh, just give me like 2 minutes. He nods, stepping out into the hallway as Eva peeks her head in all the rooms before stopping off in the bathroom and touching up her makeup. Then, deciding she's as ready as she'll ever be,
She heads back out the door. I'm all yours, buddy.
Right this way.
She follows him back to a different elevator, then to a long hallway, then to another elevator.
You know, Ava laughs, if you're kidnapping me, you could probably do it with just a bag of peanut M&Ms. You don't have to go through all this trouble.
Here we are, he says, opening a door and gesturing for her to step through. Enjoy your evening, Miss Daniels. Ava steps out onto a rooftop that looks oddly familiar, running her fingertips over a row of fancy metal binoculars. Before she can bend over to peer through one, though, she notices movement over by the corner of the roof.
Oh.
Her feet move without conscious thought, until she's in front of Deborah again, eyes drinking in that long red dress, the soft waves of blonde hair.
What the...
There are a few things I might have done differently that night, Deborah whispers, one of her fingers stroking down the side of Ava's face and sending shivers down her spine.
And if you wanted your sleepless in Seattle moment, well...
She gestures around them.
I still haven't seen it,
Ava admits through a slightly watery chuckle. Deborah rolls her eyes. I'd have taken you to the Brooklyn Bridge replica, but the exhaust fumes are a little much. She lifts her eyebrows and looks around.
The Empire State Building will just have to do. Deborah.
I should have told you it was for your own good. Deborah takes a shuddering inhale.
That it killed me to watch you leave. That I was trying to do right by you, to give you the space to grow outside of my shadow. Some plants thrive in low-light environments, actually.
What?
Nothing. I'm trying to kill fewer plants these days.
Deborah rolls her eyes, but there's a fond smile playing about her lips.
I would have told you that it wasn't meant to hurt you.
Her smile turns sad.
That I could see the way you looked at me and couldn't let that continue. Because no one has ever looked at me like that and walked away unscathed. Maybe I'm not just anyone.
Deborah's fingers caught through Ava's hair.
I'm starting to think you might have a point.
She lets out a soft laugh.
But you needed to know you could survive on your own, thrive on your own. Then let me make that choice.
You're right. I should have. The admission seems to stun both of them into silence. Deborah shakes her way out of it first.
So tell me what you wanted to say then.
Clearly you've been holding on to plenty, and God only knows if I don't give you the chance to say something now, I'll find it worked into a television show pilot soon enough.
Hey!
Deborah just arches an eyebrow.
One time, Ava grumbles.
Deborah taps at Ava's watch with a manicured nail.
I'm waiting. God, there were so many things Ava wanted to say then, has wanted to say since, but none of them feel right anymore. I wanted a say in that choice.
She takes a deep breath.
I think I get it now. Why it was the right moment for me to leave.
She runs her fingers through her hair, shaking it back from her face.
People care about me now. My resume looks hot.
She throws the words into air quotes and rolls her eyes.
And you're off on a promotional tour where I'd just be tagging around like a useless third wheel.
Not useless, but missing out on all of these opportunities, Deborah corrects.
Yes,
Ava sighs, begrudging as the admission is.
And would you have left if I gave you the choice?
Ava shrugs, ducking her face down.
You left that punch-up gig early to come to a show I specifically said you didn't need to be at.
Admit it, it was more fun with me there.
Of course it was.
Deborah throws her hands up into the air.
But that doesn't make it the better choice for you. That just makes it what I wanted.
Ava blinks once, then twice.
But you really did want me there?
Ava. Deborah lets out a shuddering breath.
I know how to do this alone,
she says, words coming a little sharper.
I've done this alone for decades.
Right. Ava braces herself for the rejection.
So you can imagine how shocked I was to find that the only thing I wanted more than to get the call telling me the networks finally wanted me, wanted my special, was to have some entitled little asshole standing at my side when the phone rang.
You have such a way with words. Ava sighs, stepping further into Deborah's space, her hand curling around Deborah's waist, fingertips digging in just a little. She feels Deborah shiver into it.
Now?
Ava swallows hard, hoping she isn't about to ruin this.
I think I was promised a Sleepless in Seattle moment.
I thought you hadn't seen it, Deborah whispers, so close Ava can feel the words ripple across her lips.
I think I can manage it, Ava says. After all, I'm just a girl, standing in front of a former boss, asking her to...
That's Notting Hill, Ava groans.
Fine, I love that your hands are cold as shit, even in the Las Vegas desert.
When Harry met Sally.
Jesus Christ, when did you become the big rom-com expert?
DJ went through a phase.
Help me out here.
Deborah leans forward instead, her lips brushing against Ava's in the lightest of kisses. Screw the speeches. They're too sappy for us anyway.
Clearly they got to start making more asshole for asshole rom-coms.
Deborah rolls her eyes and shakes her head, but she comes willingly when Ava pulls her into a kiss that's far more heated than the last, all tongue and teeth and whimpering little moans. They're both panting by the time they pull apart, and Ava can't help the smug grin.
Told you there were better ways to have done this whole conversation.
Please, you wouldn't have had the balls to do this then. You were too busy crying.
Fuck you, Ava laughs. It's healthy to show an emotion every now and then.
I'll be sure to alert you when I've scheduled my annual cry.
And besides, I can multitask.
Really? I watched you nearly break an ankle trying to walk and apply chapstick at the same time.
There was a huge pothole in the road you didn't warn me about.
It was funnier that way, Deborah smirks. Besides, multitasking is all about situational awareness.
Well,
Ava rasps, nudging Deborah back until she hits the wall, elbows coming up to rest on the ledge.
My situational awareness is telling me the roof is very, very empty right now.
You'd be shocked at how much privacy enough money can buy you. Ava drops her mouth to Deborah's neck, pressing gentle kisses to the warm skin there.
We better make good use of your investment then, she whispers.
Ava. It's a warning and a plea all in one, and it sends a pulse of white-hot desire through Ava's veins.
You told me you wanted to know what I wanted to do that night.
What? Deborah gulps as one of Ava's hands finds its way to her chest.
What you wanted to say that night?
I probably would have said a lot of things. Ava drags her mouth back up to Deborah's jawline, finding a sensitive spot right behind her ear.
And my fantasies, I sure do.
Deborah lets out a gasp as Ava sucks at her neck, just a hint of teeth before she soothes the skin with her tongue.
I tell you how good you look in this dress, how much I want to watch it falling off your shoulders.
Ava can feel the bob of Deborah's throat as she swallows. She tugs at the fabric of the dress skirt. How good I want to make you feel, if that's something you want.
Deborah pulls her lower lip between her teeth. It's still a bad idea.
It's a less bad idea now. Isn't that part of why you fired me?
I was...
Helping me.
Yeah, I know.
Ava presses a little closer. But you felt this too, didn't you? She tugs at the skirt until it's high enough that she can slip one hand beneath the hem, her nails scratching along the smooth skin of Deborah's thighs.
You knew how good we could be if we ever let ourselves give in.
Deborah's hips rock into Ava's, and Ava clenches around nothing.
Let me make you feel good, she pleads, one hand cupping at Deborah, the other curling around her hip.
Deborah gives a gulping little moan, then nods, her head falling forward as Ava's fingers slip beneath the waistband of what feels like silk. She can feel the way Deborah's thighs tense, her whole body going taut as Ava circles around her entrance before dragging her fingers back up and around Deborah's clit.
I didn't book the roof for the whole night,
Deborah gasps, her hips canting forward and her fingertips digging into Ava's arms.
Thank God I have a room downstairs then,
She slants her mouth against Deborah's and kisses her, pours all the months of pent-up emotion into it until both of them are breathing too hard to keep it going.
Inside,
Deborah orders, one of her hands curling around Ava's wrist and drawing her down,
need to feel you. Fuck.
Ava carefully presses her finger inside Deborah, working her way to a rhythm. She wants to get down to her knees and taste Deborah. Wants to tear this fancy fucking dress right off her body. Wants to feel Deborah clenching around her fingers and soaking her chin. She tells Deborah as much, feeling the way Deborah gets wetter with every whispered promise, every whispered plea.
But first,
Ava manages, her voice shaky and uneven with the weight of her own desire.
First, I want to see you come. For me. Right here. Harder.
Deborah pants, her hand curling into Ava's hair and drawing her in close as she practically rides Ava's hand all the way into a shattering orgasm that leaves her crying out into the night air. Deborah presses a soft kiss to Ava's jaw that has a strangled sound catching in the back of her throat and her whole body practically trembling with the force of her need. Deborah's eyebrows arch.
That close?
Ava manages a jerky nod.
Do you want...
Deborah's fingertips skim along the bare skin of Ava's thighs, and it takes a Herculean amount of self-control for Ava to shake her head.
Fuck, I don't think I can stay quiet.
And Ava doesn't want quiet, doesn't want quick. She wants to ride as many fingers as she can take into an orgasm that'll have her soaking the sheets. She thinks some of that must show on her face, because Deborah's pupils are blown wide with want, her lips parted slightly, and her breath coming in ragged little bursts.
Downstairs, right now.
And Ava? Well, Ava has never been quite so quick to comply. The end.